Hello, this is Mark Shanton, welcoming you to the annual Theatre Voice Review of the Year. We're in the midst of the awards season in London's Theatreland. We've already had the Evening Standard Theatre Awards, and next up are the Critics Circle Theatre Awards being presented on January 27, and then the Olivier Awards follow in March. But today we round up some of our most regular contributors to cast our personal votes in eight categories for our favourite and not-so-favourite theatrical experiences of the year, which as well as the usual nods for Best Play, Musical, Actor, Actress and Director, also includes three choices of our own for our own personal highlights and lowlights of the year, as well as a special award to acclaim something not covered by any of the other categories. I'm joined by Charles Spence of the Daily Telegraph, Matt Wolfe of the International Herald Tribune, and David Benedict of Variety to cast our votes. Let's start with Best New Play. They may continue to be an endangered species in the West End, but we're fortunately blessed to have institutions like the National, Royal Court and RSC, plus smaller satellites like the Finborough, providing an ongoing home for them. The Finborough this year even had a new play by one budding playwright, Nicholas de Jong, that transfers to the West End in February. Charlie and David, both of your choices came from the National, but for different plays. Let's start with yours, Charlie.
Yes, I chose The Pitman Painters by Lee Hall, who I suppose is best known now for Billy Elliot, but who started writing radio plays, including Spoonface Steinberg, I remember, about a handicapped girl, which I didn't actually like very much, but a lot of people absolutely loved it. The Pitman Painters is a really good play. I think it's about a bunch of Northumbrian miners who went to amateur art classes in the 30s during the Depression and began to paint. And it's a fantastic play of great jokes, great Geordie jokes, and about politics and about socialism and about art, but all done in the most entertaining way and beautifully acted. It began at the Live Theatre Company in Newcastle, and I think it was just spellbinding because you were fascinated by the characters, you were fascinated by the arguments and fascinated by the art, and a true story given a lovely life, and I loved it, I really did.
And it comes back to the National Repertoire this
very
year.
Soon, I think, yeah.
David, you chose another play.
Yes, I would quickly put in two runners-up, Scarborough by Fiona Evans at the Royal Court upstairs. I thought it was a completely fascinating play. Really interested to see what she writes next. And also Chris Shin's Now or Later play around an American presidency, which I thought was very good. But my winner would be Simon Stevens' play Harper Regan, which I thought was an extraordinarily eloquent play. Also, the great thing for me about this play was that it really embraced the element of surprise. It started off and it looked like it was going to be some kind of fashionable dystopia about a woman's downward spiral, and actually it was nothing of the sort. And it kept setting up situations where you thought, oh no, this is going to be depressing and difficult, and it kept changing. It was a fantastic role for Leslie Sharp at the centre. It was, I think, Simon Stevens' best play by quite a long way. He won the Olivier for By the Shores of the Wide Wide World, which for me felt too soapy. This felt much more contained. It was given exquisite production by Marianne Elliott, and it's really stayed with me. There's a central family plot about a family in crisis that was really resonant, beautifully understated, a very, very fine piece of writing.
Matt, I think you're a fan of Harper Regan too. It's your runner-up, but not your first choice.
I loved Harper Regan. I thought it was wonderful. But my first choice went to a play probably seen by almost no one, but a play I absolutely loved, which was a Royal Shakespeare Company production at the Tricycle Theatre, or Roy Williams' play Days of Significance, which is one of these state-of-the-nation plays that actually doesn't ever announce itself as that, which was one of the things I quite liked about it. It was sort of billed as a Shakespeare adaptation in that Much Ado About Nothing was taken as a kind of template, on top of which Roy Williams has grafted this beautiful, very touching, very funny, very raucous play about binge drinking culture, a community at war in Iraq. It was a terrific play, wonderful production from Maria Aberg, and a terrific night out.
I'd agree with that. I thought it was a fantastic
and
play.
I thought it was Roy Williams' best play by far.
Yeah. In fact, the only reason I didn't have it as mine is I think it was on at the RSC the year before, but I think it was fantastic. And I reckon he and Lee Hall and Richard Bean are the three, they're the next three, aren't they, coming up? And they're all showing terrific life, I think.
It's funny
you should Simon Stevens as well.
It's funny you should mention Richard Bean, because he's my choice, in fact. I mean, I loved both the plays that David and Charlie loved at the National, and also a third one, August Osage County. But my special plea is for Richard Bean's The English Game, which had a long tour of last year. This really beautifully observed comedy of English social and sporting manners. It's played out against a game of amateur cricket, but it hits, I thought, several home runs to
go for a much larger canvas, namely the State of Britain Today. It was a real State of the Nation play, orchestrated with masterly skill and just beautifully acted in Sean Holmes's production. Sean Holmes hasn't always done the best work. In fact, I named him in my review, I checked it this morning, as Rupert Holmes, who's a Broadway composer. So I'm going to put that record straight on that one here. And Bean, of course, also has a new play opening at the National here as well in February. England People, very nice, which I'm very much looking forward to. On to musicals. Just how far Theatreland's influence stretches beyond Shaftesbury Avenue was proved last year by the fact that a West End musical, Mamma Mia, that opened in 1999 and is still running there, became the basis for the highest grossing British film of all time at the UK box office. Billy Elliot also became the biggest new musical hit on Broadway last autumn. But the news wasn't quite as bright in the West End. And in fact, in this category, we're actually allowing ourselves to vote for revivals as well as new musicals. What was your choice, Charlie, for Best Musical?
No doubt about it for me. It was La Cage aux Folles, which opened at the Menier Chocolate Factory back in Jan, and then transferred to the West End more recently, at the beginning of the autumn. I think it's fantastic and a really wonderful performance from Douglas Hodge as the drag queen. Fantastic Jerry Herman tunes, marvellous humanity, and really well staged, and actually much better in the West End than not normally the case, is it? But when you have a sort of studio production, then you're really close and on the action, and it really worked in the Playhouse better. A fantastic scene when he stalks out in a huff, and actually you see him going out of this side door, exit door, fire exit door, into the street outside. I just loved that. I really liked that show. It left me feeling elated for days afterwards, which is quite rare, and it's just an unashamedly feel-good show, and I really loved it.
I saw it again actually last week, just before he left the show, and he'd been suffering a flu bug again, and didn't do the exit through that door. He left through the auditorium. I think he was frightened of catching a cold. Matt, your choice.
La Cage aux Folles as well, although I didn't see the West End transfer, but I voted for it on the basis of the Menier Chocolate Factory production. I'd seen the original Broadway production, and I've seen it in various incarnations over the years. I think one of the things critics actually enjoy is to have their assumptions proven wrong. And when I had heard that Douglas Hodge had been cast in this, I said to David Babani, who runs the Menier, that seems very odd casting to me, because I hadn't liked Douglas Hodge much in Guys and Dolls, and I just couldn't see him inheriting this role at all. And I thought he was superb, and it was a thrilling, invigorating evening.
And you also had a runner-up, I think.
Yeah, Little Night Music, just because one has to have a runner-up, and it was interesting to see Sondheim and Sex done through this hazy filter of Trevor Nunn, but I still give La Cage the prize.
I thought the Menier also had a stellar year, as well as those two. I also saw their production of Sunday in the Park with George transferred to Broadway, which was fantastic. Maria Friedman also returned to the West End via the Menier with her brilliant one-woman show. But I'm actually opting for an even smaller Southwark Studio Theatre for my nomination, a production of Sweeney Todd that I saw at the Union Theatre. I'm one of the judges of the Empty Space Peter Brook Awards, and we actually gave them our most promising studio theatre award, and it was great to see it vindicated with that production. I mean, I've seen this Sweeney Todd in any number of productions, from the National to Covent Garden to Broadway, and actually I thought this was probably the most scarily effective production I've ever seen, just that in this tiny little room with the action coursing all the way around it, and the Union Theatre is really upping its game in terms of casting as well. They're getting really good kids now to do it, because of people who've done the West End, because they can. I mean, people don't get paid very much, and it's 60 seats only. Hardly anybody sees their shows, unfortunately, but what an amazing production. So that's going to be my musical of the year. David, what is yours?
I would vote for La Cage aux Folles, but I'm being deeply purist about this, because I actually don't think it's much of a musical. I thought that some of the production was outstanding. But for me, the best experience in a theatre that was in large part driven by music was Brief Encounter by Knee High Theatre Company, which interwove the script of the film, the original play, that Still Life, that Brief Encounter was based on, a lot of Coward songs and poems set to music. The cast were immaculate. It was, to my mind, far and away the best thing that Knee High has done in London. I cried my eyes out on the first time I saw it. I went back a second time and loved it. The quality of performance from everyone, the quality of the singing. I mean, the beautiful unaccompanied singing, comedy numbers. It just had an emotional range that pretty much left everything else I saw last year standing.
Great. On to Best Actor and Best Actress. The British stage, of course, is still a training ground for some of the world's best film and TV talent, and we're so lucky to see them first here and that they keep returning to it. I'm therefore going to kick off this category by naming Ken Branagh as my choice for Best Actor. He's one of those actors whose career was born on stage before he went to become a movie star, but he keeps returning to the theatre. In Ivanov, which launched the Domar's West End residency at Wyndham's, he played the title role of Ivanov. Just stunningly, I thought. I mean, it's a man whose life is in a sudden freefall of doubt, debt and despair, and it just resonated so fiercely. And, of course, the other thing I was going to say about this, though, is that great performances don't happen in isolation, and the magnificence of Groundage's production was that the entire ensemble cast around him was just superb, from Gina McKee as his dying wife to Andrea Riseborough as the young woman who falls in love with him. Just a fantastic performance in a fantastic production. But there have been lots of other amazing performances too this year. What's yours, David?
Mine, I'm putting in a bid for a runner-up, a sort of somewhat unnoticed performance because it was so subtle, was Nick Siddy in Harper Regan. He plays the husband who has done something terribly compromising. He's been possibly looking at child pornography on the internet. We never kind of established whether he's guilty or innocent, but his performance of a role that could have been horribly signposted with... It's one of those roles that just could have been overplayed. You sort of go, oh, beneath the surface, he's feeling guilty. And he just didn't do it. It was amazingly subtle. And the last scene where he sat there and they were both trying as hard as they can, a husband and wife, desperately hoping all will be for the best. And this awful sense of doubt and pain because they love one another, but they don't know whether they'll survive. It was absolutely beautiful. However, my absolute performance of the year was Doug Hodge in L'Cage aux Folles, because it's one thing to pull off a performance in, I don't know, Hamlet, or indeed Ken Branagh's Ivanov, because you've got a really good script there to support you. That's not to take away from those performances. It's just, if you've got a first-class script, you really can fly. The script of L'Cage aux Folles is anything but first-class. It's very ropey. It's got a great idea, and it's got great heart, but the actual lines are terribly weak. But Doug Hodge gave one of the best performances I've ever seen anybody give of anything, frankly. Mm-hmm. I do think it was absolutely tremendous, and he at all times played truth in the big scene at the in the restaurant, where he has to pull off the fact that he is a woman in front of absolutely everybody. All he did was play, "I really love my son." That's what he played, and it was extraordinarily moving. You completely believed in the relationships that he had spun, and This was a performer absolutely at the top of his game. I mean, I watched on YouTube a clip of him doing it at the Royal Variety performance, where he got to stand there in a Judy Garland wig playing the Palladium, singing "I Am What I Am," and I thought, that's kind of some weird apotheosis. But you know, fair dues. Why not have that icing on the cake, because it's a really wonderful performance
and quite amazing for an actor too, who's normally associated with Pinter and indeed Tyson Donicker.
And he looks like a prop forward rugby player.
Yeah. You know? I genuinely think Doug Hodge is one of the most versatile actors in this country.
Because he directs as well.
He's very gifted.
Yeah.
Charlie, what's your choice?
Well, this is a bit of a cheat, but I'd like to have two, because I thought it was a fantastic double act as much as anything else, which was Kevin Spacey and Jeff Goldblum in Speed the Plough. The producer who's got a film to pitch and looks terrific, and the executive who's got to persuade to take it on, old friends and rivals and everything else. Not one of Mamet's best plays, but cracking dialogue, but just watching these two do it was like watching really great improvising jazz musicians, I thought. I was just riveted throughout. And I've seen other productions of this. There was one in the West End a few years ago, which was very dull. There's one on Broadway now, which is very dull and seems insubstantial. I just thought these two, the way they played off each other. Goldblum got some rather sniffy reviews, but I thought he was the sort of perfect straight man, and it was necessary there, and that Spacey was just sublime, I thought. And there were bits where he was so pumped up, he sort of started doing press-ups while smoking a cigarette and requesting coffee all at the same time. I thought it was glorious, and that's just really exciting acting.
Matt, I think you were an admirer of those two performances as well.
Yeah, they were my runner-ups, and they were extraordinary, I think, separately and together. And having just seen the Broadway production, albeit with an understudy playing the part of Bobby Gould, one does really become aware of the pathos, strangely, that Jeff Goldblum found in that role, partly because he's so tall that he seems to exist in some other realm, which is perfect for the part. But I think one of the really gratifying things about going to the theatre in London is that you see bona fide stars, and then you also see actors when they are on the cusp of becoming a star. And I would vote for my Actor of the Year, somebody in that category, who was Jonathan Slinger for his extraordinary Royal Shakespeare Company performance as Richard II, one of the most moving Shakespeare performances I've ever seen. I think there's a thing about Shakespeare kind of stripped of self-consciousness and eloquence and played very viscerally and impetuously. This was a raw, brave, nearly literally naked performance, and it contained the most single shocking moment of the year when Slinger takes off his wig and hurls it to the ground in disgust, and the entire audience at the Roundhouse gasped. It was an amazing performance.
And on the actress front, we've also been richly blessed this year with great performances from home and abroad. Let's start with your choice, Matt.
Well, really, really tough this year. God, there were about 10 or 12 women one could have named, but perhaps rather unexpectedly, although I was tempted to vote for my fellow country person, Amy Morton, in August Osage County, because I think she is the bedrock of that remarkable production. But I decided in the end to go with Jessica Stevenson-Hinds in The Norman Conquest, because there's something about her performance as Annie, the lovesick Annie, who has never quite got what she wanted. She exists under the thumb of this dreadful unseen mother, and she takes naturalness to such eloquent heights, and just sort of running her hands through her hair, she told you everything you wanted to know about that character and more. I thought it was exquisite work.
Your runner-up, Matt, is actually my winner. I thought I had that amazing ensemble cast from Steppenwolf. The standouts were, of course, Deanna Dunnigan and Amy Morton, as the mother and daughter engage in that sort of epic battle of wills. And, of course, Deanna Dunnigan won the Tony Award, but in the much more showy part. But Amy Morton was just so infinitely subtle and really magnificently angry and moving and heartbreaking. It was just really one of the great performances of the year. I'm also going to give you a runner-up, Eleanor Roger in Piaf. I thought it was a five-star performance in a one-star play. I have now seen it three times. The play gets worse each time and the performance gets better. It's really amazing. Charlie, what was your choice?
Well, am I allowed to cheat again? Because once again, it's really the ensemble playing that I'm picking on, and that was The Chalk Garden, Edith Bagnold's play, which was revived at the Donmar Warehouse, and just had these three remarkable women in it, Margaret Tysack, Penelope Wilton, and Felicity Jones. Three generations, really, because Margaret Tysack was sort of meant to be at least 20 years older than Penelope Wilton, I think. It was glorious playing, all three of these, the sort of damaged teenage girl, Wilton as the middle-aged woman with a secret past, and Margaret Tysack as this almost Lady Bracknell-like character, but actually Lady Bracknell with a broken, frozen heart. I just, whenever I think of that production, the word perfect comes to my mind. It was just perfectly done, and it was, all the support was fine, but it was these three actresses giving performances of such truth and such, you really believed in the relationships between all of them. I adored it. I thought it was absolutely remarkable.
I would echo what Charlie says. I'm particularly pleased, actually, that he mentions Felicity Jones, who was missed out in the Evening Standard Awards that fairly gave awards to Tysack and Wilton. But there was something about the connection between those three that really was remarkable. And one of the reasons for the perfection of that production and its direction was the balance. The fact is that all those performances worked because of the way in which they all related to one another. Forced to choose, I would actually give it to Penelope Wilton, because I went back to see it a second time. I decided to do no homework on that play when I went to see it, so I knew nothing about the big reveal of the plot. And once I had seen exactly what she was suppressing all the way through the first half of the play, I went back to see it a second time to see exactly how she did that, and it was even more exciting to see the detailing. And Tysack, in a way, has an easier time of it because she's got killer one-liners, Wildian lines. Wilton does
her most eloquent work with Silence. She did exactly the same in The Family Reunion. They're just, if ever there were an actor that can do Still Waters Run Deep, it's her. She just, there's something remarkable about her work. It's so unshowy, it's so discreet, and she appears to be doing so little. She's clearly thinking an awful lot, and it just draws you in. I thought she was mesmerising.
There have been lots of standout productions this year, and it sometimes seems that most of them were directed by Michael Grandage. He's got the vote of two of you, David.
Well, yeah, I mean, we sort of already covered how marvellous The Chalk Garden was. I mean, I would keep on at that subject, because The Chalk Garden did used to get done, and it sort of got this reputation as being a bit of an old war horse. The point about Grandage's production, which I don't think in many ways really was an awful lot better than some of his other work, it's about speed of thought. That play was rattled through. The audience was constantly keeping up with the speed at which things were happening, but it never feels rushed. If there's a pause, it's completely filled. It's as if the audience takes a breath at the beginning of the show, and you're never allowed out until an interval, or indeed until the end of a play. And he just kept that going, and he did that with Twelfth Night. He did that with Ivanov, another play that's actually rather awkward in places. It is very much the relatively unknown Chekhov play, because it's early and it's not as pure as the late ones. And he made it look as good as it could possibly get.
Charlie, you voted for him too.
Yes, and I won't go on, because I agree with everything that David said. He has just a director at the moment with a magic touch, isn't he? I think I really liked his Twelfth Night a lot as well. I've just been talking to a lot of Americans about it, and a lot of them were saying they thought it was one of the most perfect things they'd ever seen. And I don't know, I think he's just got this rare knack to go right to the heart of a play with a minimum of self-display and a maximum of respect for both the text and the actors. It shouldn't be such a rare thing, that, but it is. I think he's, and I think a lot of it is probably because he started as an actor himself and he understands them inside out.
But there are an awful lot of actor turned directors that don't actually pull off. Because pull off that trick. I mean, I just think there's something very complete about his ability with stagecraft, the ability of design to support the idea. You get a sense in a good Grandage production that everybody is working to the same thing. The lighting is talking to the design, which is talking to the text, and the actors become part of that. You don't sit there. For a long time in his career, he sort of didn't really win awards, and people never talked about the design of his shows, because you're not aware that they're acting upon you, but my God,
yes,
they are.
Yes, exactly. There's a kind of discretion about him, which I think is fantastic.
Matt, you've chosen somebody else.
Well, only because Michael Grandage, I think I've given him this award four times in the last 10 years, and I sometimes feel with these that it's almost the Michael Grandage-Rupert Gould Award, and I feel that in the interest of fairness, because they're not the only two directors in Britain, my runner-up was Jamie Lloyd, a Grandage protege, who I thought did really interesting, sterling work in three very different assignments across the year, The Pincher Double Bill of the Lever, and The Collection, Piaf, and The Pride. But I voted for a director who I think has been scandalously under acclaim this year for both his productions of Speed the Plough and The Norman Conquest, Matthew Warchus, both at the Old Vic, two totally different assignments, one very short, one epic, one American, one that couldn't be more English, and both, in my view, absolutely perfect.
I would actually agree. Warchus would have been my runner-up, because The Norman Conquest are unassailably Alan Ayckbourn's masterpiece, but just because you've got a great script doesn't mean you end up with a great production. We've all seen dubs of wonderful shows, but what he did was he revealed Alan Ayckbourn to be Chekhov, basically. You got a series of lives that were absolutely stranded in classic Chekhovian fashion. It was Uncle Vanya and Surbiton. I thought they were absolutely extraordinarily beautifully done. The immaculate performances, everybody listening. It was like a pretentious thing to say, but it was sort of like watching a sextet at work. Everybody was attendant upon everybody else. It was beautifully controlled by Matthew Walton.
It sounds corny to say, but when it was over, I felt really teary, because I wanted to see it again instantly.
Yeah. It was so
enjoyable.
I've
almost never felt that. I wanted to go right back in and see all three again.
And while I would endorse both Grandage and Walton, Actually, I thought the defining achievement of the year on the directorial front was Michael Boyd's magnificent eight-part history play of the Roundhouse. This is just the most extraordinary thing. He populated this entire pageant with a vibrant and vivid sense of life. I think it's going to be talked about for years to come. I mean, and it also represents kind of what he wants the RSC to be, a real ensemble company that can give a cohesive vision to an entire body of work.
I mean, it was so exciting seeing that season. I didn't see them in Stratford. I only saw them at the Roundhouse over, you know, 2 days, 2 or 3 days, massively full of Shakespeare. And it was so wonderful. I know it's a crass thing to say, but when you actually see those plays in order and you see this unmapping and unwrapping of British history, and you suddenly understand all the links, because you go, yes, I know he's talking about his father because I've seen his father do it in the previous play. It made such coherent sense. I would also, we don't have a design award, I thought Tom Piper's work was magnificent on that eight play cycle, and he really, really made it cohere by being neither absurdly modern or dutifully realistic in terms of period. It just allowed the plays and the relationships and the ideas to resonate. It was fantastic work from him and Michael Boyd.
I mean, I didn't see them in Stratford either, but I just thought they were like custom built for the Roundhouse. It was
and a fantastic rebuild by Piper, yes, of the Roundhouse. When the RSC first played the Roundhouse a couple of years ago, it was a disaster.
They made it like a ballroom. Do you remember? Mm. And it was.
Then the sound was terrible, and you couldn't hear what was going on, and the audience was too far away.
That was 24 hours of Shakespeare, wasn't it? Altogether, or slightly more. Fantastic. I just find with Boyd, I think I really admire what he's done with the RSC. I admire his doggedness. I just think that sometimes he's got a slightly leaden touch. But by and large, I mean, what he's done for the RSC has been fantastic.
So on to our personal choices for highlights and then lowlights of the year. Matt, what was your highlight?
Well, it's a little repetitive with my best director, but what the hell? I think because it wasn't that long ago that people were calling for Kevin Spacey's demise and defection, whatever, at the Old Vic, my highlight of the year was the resurgence of the Old Vic as the place where I had two of the greatest nights of the year. And it was interesting that Kevin Spacey won a special award from the Evening Standard, because that was the very paper that called for his cultural execution. So it just shows how people have brief memories. But I hope he continues in this vein. We shall see.
I think you had a runner-up as well.
Yes, my runner-up, as has been voiced previously, was just for all that we single out individuals, I think the strength of ensemble playing in this city is remarkable year in, year out, and was manifest again this year in many productions, including The Chalk Garden, August Osage County, The Norman Conquest, etc.
Charlie, I think you're going to echo some of this in your heart.
Yes. Again, for me, it was the Old Vic. I seem to have been covering the Old Vic since I was born, almost. When I was at the Evening Standard, it was when it was in terrible state, and then Ed Mirvish came, and then Peter Hall took it over, and it was, you know, it's always been in a state of crisis, not least with Kevin Spacey. But this year, I do think that double whammy of Speed the Plough and the Norman Conquest was superb. Hats off to Waters, and well done for Mac for having him as best director. But what I admire is the way Spacey has stayed there. I mean, he doesn't need that place. He doesn't need the hassle. Mm. And he's taken terrific flack. And with great dignity, I think, and hasn't spoken back. And, you know, he has had a really bumper year last year. Fantastic.
There's also an Old Vic link to yours.
Yes, I'm going to give my runner-up to a performance at the Old Vic, which is Paul Ritter in The Norman Conquest.
Yes.
Paul Ritter is one of those actors that actually no one outside the profession seems to know, because he never does that kind of big, splashy, flashy work. He was so sublime as Reg in The Norman Conquest, as we've all said. The ensemble was fantastic, but there were just moments of him dancing in irritation at his wife, also exquisitely played by Amanda Root. I thought it was a fantastic performance. There is kind of nothing that Paul Ritter can't seem to do. I mean, you talk to other actors and they all just go, oh my God, Paul Ritter, he's so wonderful. And you know, one wonders why he isn't better known, why he's not playing
it's
leads.
It's because he's got a hint of sleaze about him.
Yes. Which was brilliant in The Norman Conquest.
Yeah, everything he does is that slight edge of sleaze. Yes. So he's never going to be a star.
Or the hot house here at the National.
Yes. He's a bit smarmy in a good way.
Yeah. But you can do both good and bad, mm-hmm, can't you? Mm-hmm.
My winner actually is something that I know Charlie liked, which was A Month in the Country, an adaptation of the J.L. Carr Booker-nominated novel from the, I think, 83 or 4. A beautiful, beautiful production at Salisbury Playhouse. It was just exquisitely done. It's an adaptation by the artistic director there, Philip Wilson. It's been a long-held project that he wanted to do. This year was the perfect year to do it because it's all about people recovering from being shell-shocked in the First World War. It was an absolutely beautifully calibrated production, very, very well designed by Matthew Wright, beautifully lit by Tim Mitchell, and it held an audience absolutely rapt. It was very sensitive. There was my newcomer of the year, an actress called, I'd never come across, called Helen Bradbury, gave a beautifully distilled performance. I assumed I just missed her entire career and then discovered that she was a newcomer. It really stayed with me. It was just resonant and quiet and eloquent.
I nearly crashed the car driving out of that because I was crying so much. It was so moving. It was sort of beautifully done. It reminded me very much of those Cottesloe productions here in the 70s and early 80s.
The Bill Bryden ones.
There was that same sense of ensemble and integrity about it.
It just very quietly was very, very good.
Such a shame that shows like that just disappear without trace, as indeed did the Talk Garden. And my own highlight of the year echoes a theme that we've been talking about already, the Donmar kind of changing the face of the West End with its full-time residency at Wyndham's and charging just a £32.50 top. That was indeed in turn copied by Six Characters in Search of an Author when that transferred to the Guildford. But the West End is in need of some help in terms of getting people into plays, and the Donmar doing a £32.50 top price for stars of the calibre of Ken Branagh and soon to come Jude Law and Judi Dench. It was an amazing initiative. Of course, it can't be kept up forever, but for now, that was my highlight of the year, alongside other schemes to regenerate the West End, like the Haymarket's directorial residencies there. We had not an entirely successful season by Jonathan Kent last year, and now we're about to have Sean Mathias this year. On to lowlights. Matt and Charlie, I think you're in agreement again. Matt?
Well, yes, my... what can one say? I love musicals. They're in my cultural DNA, so I think I take it very personally when, you know, I see one bad one after another, because you come across so many people who say to you, but musicals aren't really very good, and I want to say, no, musicals are great. There's nothing better than a really terrific musical. And then you have to sit through Imagine This and Gone with the Wind, and even, I'm sorry to say, Zorro, which I don't share other people's affection for. And so I think my low light of the year is the West End's seemingly terminal inability to generate a decent, original, homegrown musical.
Yes, well, that's mine, really, except I would add, which you may have been lucky enough to miss, Peter Pan L musical.
I did miss that. I
was
did
indeed
miss that.
Fucking L. And, it was probably one of the worst things I've ever seen.
I managed to miss that
in
one
Spanish,
too. I was away and missed it and read the review and thought I won't bother people. We also haven't mentioned Gone with the Wind, which quickly went with the wind. David?
My runner-up, and this may be slightly controversial because I know that the critic to my right rather admired it, but my criterion for lowlight had to be that you were desecrating a masterpiece. I mean, quite clearly, Gone with the Wind was an absolute dog, but, you know, it was a very, very foolish project. The Deep Blue Sea is a total masterpiece by Terence Rattigan. When Penelope Wilton played at the West End, it was astonishingly moving. I defy anybody that went to see Edward Hall's revival. I just do not believe that anybody going to see that play cold would have had a clue that it was a masterpiece. It looked like a dated, ropey load of old rubbish. There was a perfectly adequate performance in the central role, but the direction, I thought, was really shocking. But the absolute winner on the same grounds was The Wizard of Oz at the Royal Festival Hall. Jude Kelly's lamentable, arrogant, foolish production, which actually reduced the audience to laughter when up came a silly little projection of the Emerald City, and there's a line about, oh my God, isn't it? I've never seen anything so beautiful in my life. And the audience just sniggered because the design was so shoddy. I mean, they had no business putting on a show that's as technically demanding as that in the Royal Festival Hall, which is a concert space. You'd need thousands and thousands of pounds to turn it into anything approaching a theatre. It just isn't the right sort of space for it, and it died a death deservedly.
And for my low light of the year, the National may have had three of the year's best plays, but I also thought it had three of the worst. Fram, The Hour We Knew Nothing of Each Other, and Afterlife, the Michael Frayn play. Three, I thought, complete turkeys, each one. The Hour We Knew Nothing of Each Other, I thought was particularly in terms of the one without any dialogue, just actors crisscrossing the stage. Fram, a terrible play by Tony Harrison, in verse. And Afterlife, a really turgid historical play.
Also a lot of it in verse.
A lot of it in verse, yes. Yeah. Three really bad plays next to three really good plays that the National also produced. So there's my low light. Finally, a special award. Things not covered by any of the above. Charlie, what was yours?
Mine's Cameron McIntosh. It's not just for this year, but just for what he's doing for West End theatres and doing them up and spending, putting money back into them and restoring them beautifully. I mean, I think what he did with The Prince of Wales is just fantastic, and now he's done Wyndham's. And also for, you know, giving this terrific opportunity for Grandage to play in the West End. I think he's everything an impresario should be, and he also shows up Andrew Lloyd Webber, who really ought to be investing in his own theatres rather than just self-gratifyingly increasing his image.
Indeed, and that's is indeed my special award. It follows a similar theme. I mean, Andrew Lloyd Cameron's lesson is an ongoing inspiration, I think. My special award is for theatres and the way new life is being breathed into old spaces, and the way the Old Vic was turned into a theatre in the round for the Norman Conquest, and indeed that's been kept on for the next show, Complicit, and then Dancing at Lunasa. Also the way the cinema on the Haymarket was brought back into life as a theatrical space for Brief Encounter, and last not least, the return of the Hippodrome as a theatrical space for Le Clique. But alas, not for long. It's going to be turned into a casino next. Matt.
Westminster Castle don't believe it can work as a theatre. Oh, really?
Exactly. Although I was walking past the other day and the scaffolding has finally come off after all these years. Matt, what's your special award?
Well, a runner up to completely different people from different aspects of the profession. I just wanted to give a quick shout out to Alan Howard as Tiresias in Oedipus. This is an actor enfeebled by illness who, during the limited run of that play, took the curtain call on very few occasions because his diabetes is so getting the better of him that as soon as he did his one scene on stage, he had to go home. And there was something I thought remarkably moving, first of all, about his commitment to do the play to begin with, and secondly, about the performance he gave, which I thought was extraordinarily eerie and moving and haunting and played to all of his strengths. And, of course, he had been the National's previous Oedipus, so there was something very wonderful about him passing the baton to Ray Fiennes in the part. But apropos of what David was saying about design, I wanted to give the special award this year to the lighting designer Neil Austin, who I realized I was invoking his name repeatedly across the year for productions like Oedipus, Twelfth Night, No Man's Land, and especially Piaf, which, like you, Mark, I've seen three times for completely different reasons. And each time I saw it, the most recent being yesterday at the understudy run-through, I was remarkably struck by how his lighting is a character in that production. It's just staggeringly dramatic and rich and enriching. So, Neil Austin.
I would second that, actually. There's one lighting state in Twelfth Night where we arrive on the beach for the first time. I mean, the design of that show is so simple. There's a back wall that goes in and out. That's it. There's about six props and a sofa that comes on at one for one scene. And all that happens is the wall goes out and he brings up some colour. And the mood, the tone, the atmosphere, everything changes. It's an exquisite piece of work. However, my special award goes to someone of promise, Alexei K. Campbell, an actor who wrote his first play. Eyebrows were initially slightly raised because he's the partner of Dominic Cook, who runs the Royal Court, and the Royal Court programmed his play. It was initially read at the Royal Court under an assumed name. They then decided that they liked the play, at which point everybody fessed up to what was going on. And it was totally vindicated, an exquisite production by Jamie Lloyd, immaculately cast with Tim Steed playing three small roles and Bertie Carvel, Lindsay Marshall and J.J. Field. I just thought that it was one of the most exciting debuts I've ever seen. It's a truism to say that because you've been an actor, it means you're a good writer. There are a ton of actors that have written plays that are nothing like as good as this. It was structurally so complex, and the structure absolutely spoke to the themes of the play. It wasn't just a clever device. It allowed actors great opportunities. In the year that sadly saw the death of Harold Pinter, it was a very Pinteresque play because it was absolutely full of dialogue in which people did not say what they meant. It was properly theatrical dialogue, which meant that the audience was unusually rapt, watching it, listening it, and reading what was going on. I thought it was a really remarkable piece of work.
Yes,
and look forward to his next play, which has been commissioned by the Bush.
So finally, on balance then, Charlie, would you say this is a good year or a bad year in British theatre?
Gosh, it's tricky, isn't it? It was pretty... There was terrific highlights, but I'm very worried about it, basically. As we sit here now... it was good last year, but was this going to be the last gasp, as it were? You know, we are heading for this terrific crisis. It's getting worse and worse. I think, just talking about our role slightly, I mean, I think the job of reviewers is under threat, as it has never been before. I think the West End is probably going to have a really tough year. I think Oliver will do fantastically, but that might be the last really big gasp. And I think actually the National, where we are at the moment, was very mixed, actually, and it looks quite promising for next year. But so I don't think there were some marvellous things last year. I've just got the feeling that we might look back on last year as being one of the last great years. I'd hope not, but I'm very apprehensive.
What about you, Matt?
Well, it's interesting. To slightly, I suppose, follow on from what Charlie's saying, I think it was probably a better year for theatre last year than it will have been for theatre critics. And I think there's going to be an interesting point, which may arrive sooner rather than later, when there is more theatre than exists people to write about it. And that's going to be very interesting because, you know, if the production makes a noise but nobody's there to applaud it, what happens? Having said that, without harping on Alan Howard, I think the commitment of him to be in Oedipus is emblematic of a much larger commitment in the British theatre that makes me fundamentally sanguine, but I'm a glass half full kind of guy. So, yeah, it was a good year.
And finally, David.
You know, it's interesting. There have already been pieces about how what's interesting about the Golden Globes and the British contingent within the Golden Globes is how much talent has risen up through British theatre, whether that's Danny Boyle or the acting talent, Sally Hawkins, who was here at the National in the House of Bernarda Alba. I mean, you know, the list goes on and on and on. The National, Don Maher, prestigious addresses like that are, I think, going to have a good year. Last year didn't seem to me to be a vintage year. As we look back at the highlights, of course, suddenly I am filled with a rosy glow of nostalgia, going, oh, but that was good and that was great and that was wonderful. I don't think that I will come away going, oh my God, all those great new plays in 2008. There weren't that many. The good plays, I think, really were good, but there wasn't that much happening. I think next year, however, is, as everybody's saying, is going to be a testing year. I think part of the problem is that there aren't a lot of people out there with money to invest in shows. I think we're going to see a very, very strong divide now between prestigious addresses that will do well because people will want guarantees. People will want people that go to the Royal Court aren't going for a great night out of entertainment. They're going for other reasons. They will still go. There's particular addresses will still survive. But in the amorphous blob that is the commercial West End, it will be great big shows that you've seen massively hyped on TV that will survive. The middle-ranking stuff, I really doubt. I worry about the survival of the straight play in the West End. But maybe that's fine, because it's being looked after at other addresses. I don't think we should all start renting our clothes asunder because a play with six characters in it that's a little drama, oh my God, we can't get that on at the Garrick. Well, okay, it's happening probably at the National, or it's happening elsewhere. It might even happen on telly.
I'm actually encouraged by the fact that there are an awful lot of plays being announced for the first half of this year in the West End. There's one after the other. The thing I'm worried about most is musicals, because there are very, very few musicals, by contrast, announced, and they actually are the commercial driver of the West End. And without good musicals around, the West End, the crisis will be accelerated in the West End.
Worth saying, perhaps, that it's looking brighter here than on Broadway. At least we've got this mixed economy, as it were, with, you know, much stronger subsidised sector, as David was just saying, and we're not entirely in a world of, you know,
big musicals or nothing.
Well, and following on from that, one interesting thing, having just been in New York, where, you know, shows were shuttering left, right, and center, American friends of mine who came to London for Christmas, the first thing they remarked upon was they couldn't get in to any of the half dozen shows they most wanted to see, whether it was No Man's Land or Twelfth Night or Before Christmas, The Norman Conquest. So something's working if they can't get into the shows they want to see.
And we'll be here every single month, as usual, reporting on what's new, what's good, and what's not. Thanks, Matt, David, and Charlie.
Thank you.